the glass. It left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Aguilla. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score! And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg.
Okay, let's get it going and let's get things underway on this Tuesday, March 11th. It's Flames Talk from our Groundworks downtown studio here on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts, and of course live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. We got a busy hour ahead. Daily Flames Roundtable about midway through, but it is a Tuesday, which means we're kicking things off by saying hello to our hopefully much more well-rested NHL insider, Frank Saravalli. He's brought to you by South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave or visit southtrailchrysler.com. It's Pat Steinberg along with you on this Tuesday Flames Talk, and Frank joins us now from Daily Faceoff, dailyfaceoff.com. Amazon, and a whole lot more. Hello, Frankie. Are we a more rested version of you?
Yeah, I feel like a human being again, which is good. Friday night, it was a struggle when I checked in with you later after the deadline. And I'm just curious, though, as we've now gotten to our post-deadline selves, Have you put a lid on your tea or what?
Yes. There's Saran wrap everywhere. Don't worry. We're perfectly taken care of here. Just an
absolute... I heard you almost killed the entire studio.
Yeah, I almost,
like the circuit boards, everything was going haywire.
Yeah, I almost put us like radio, sports radio and radio in this country's on life support to begin with. I don't need to pour tea all over the circuit boards to expedite the process, Frank. So yes, we're all good. Very careful. That's the first time I've ever done anything like that before. It was one of the most embarrassing moments of my career. So I'm glad that we haven't spilt anything yet today.
You're trending in the right direction. Congratulations.
You know what? Can't go anywhere but up from the way yesterday went. Hey, when we talked to you on Friday after the deadline and you were running on fumes, and we do appreciate the chat immediately following the deadline, but now that we've had a little bit of time to reflect, and you know, I don't think it was a surprise to you when we found out the Flames weren't going to do anything, and that was kind of the way this thing was trending for quite some time, but you know, now there's been a little bit of time to reflect on Calgary's deadline or their lack of moves leading up to the deadline. How do you look at what they did, what they didn't do, and their decisions on deadline day?
Yeah, definitely not a surprise. I thought very measured and realistic. I mean, if you want, you could have Craig Conroy involved in the rental game, trading a top-end prospect and a first-round pick to get your hands on Brock Nelson. That's if you were even willing to waive to Canada, which I was told it was a no and never needed to get to that point, because the team that stepped up to get him not only was located in the U.S. and was his preferred destination, but also put far and away the best package on the table. I mean, you could get involved in those conversations if you want, but does that really serve the best long-term interest of the Calgary Flames? And I think the answer to that question is no. And I think the Flames were very realistic with their expectations. This season has exceeded them. I don't think if you really inject truth serum into Craig Conroy and even those above him in the Flames hierarchy, that they would think that on March 11th, we'd be sitting here today with the Calgary Flames occupying a Stanley Cup playoff spot. I really don't. And just because you are doesn't mean that you act irrationally and move heaven and earth to support a team that I still think gets in, but in the end may fall short. There's no guarantee. And so they made their move much earlier in February, going down the Frost and Farabee train. By all accounts, they really didn't have to give up too much. And it's given them a chance to see if they can find something different. Now, I realize that the production to this point has been underwhelming, but that's okay, because it's not a today thing. It's a today, tomorrow, and next year thing.
Well, and with that in mind, 19 games to go, and of the four teams fighting for this final playoff spot in the Western Conference, the Flames are most in the driver's seat, at least in terms of points percentage and protecting the spot. How do you look at the Flames, and I guess how do you handicap the Flames in their final 19 down the stretch?
It's going to be a dogfight. I mean, they've got limitations in their ability to score goals. Thankfully, they've got a goaltender that covers a lot of that up. They've got a scrappy group that's determined and has some veteran leadership. But they're going to be going up against a team in the Vancouver Canucks that, even with all their, you know, their issues this year, I should say, they're probably top to bottom a little bit more talented. And so can you hold that team off? They luckily for the Flames, Vancouver has struggled to score almost as much as the Flames have. And that part, plus the constant daily drama, the latest version being Brock Besser and the post-deadline comments, that there's a window and an opening. And it's going to be up to the Flames to see if they can seize it.
And we'll get to the Canucks in a second, because you're right. The drama and the Besser thing and just their situation is of great interest to Flames fans in this market. But we, Wes and I talked a little bit about this on our Daily Flames Roundtable on Monday with Derek Wills as well. We were talking about Dustin Wolf and once again, the idea of his candidacy for the Calder Trophy. And you and I haven't spoken about that in the last number of weeks. It's probably been a few months since the last time I asked you about that. But now that we're into the final quarter of the season, and Dustin Wolf continues to be the largest reason why the Flames are where they are, how much... In your eyes, how much has his Calder Trophy case grown over the last number of weeks and months?
I think pretty significantly, because we took what was a little bit of a slow start with Dan Vladar getting a lot of, like, had, here's the thing, maybe this is an easier way to say it, is had Dustin Wolf started from October and gotten, or had played as well as he has and consistently put up the numbers, had he gotten the opening night start, had he gotten the tough assignments, which again, I'm not entirely sold that, you know, had they not let him wade his way into the season that he would have had the same success. I just think it changes his candidacy in the view of others. It wasn't necessarily front of mind for people until we got to like US Thanksgiving. And that's unfortunate for him because he's been that good anytime he's been given the opportunity. I think another really simple way and clear way for me to say it is if the Calgary Flames make the Stanley Cup playoffs, Dustin Wolf will get the number one spot on my Calder Trophy ballot. That's the cleanest. I don't care what Macklin Celebrini does between now and then. I don't care what Lane Hudson does between now and then. That's not to write them off. It's just to say that if the Flames make it with the goal scoring lack of support that they've had, I mean, look at all the other teams. If you sort the entire league by goals scored, look at where the Flames are and who their company is, and then look at where they are in the standings. They've got 161 goals for. The Ducks, Preds, Sharks, Canucks, Islanders.
Yep.
The next team that you get to that's a playoff team is 26th, and they've scored 15 more goals at this point in the season. With a quarter of the season to go, that means they're on track to finish with 20 more goals for, which is, like, for most teams, the equivalent of, like, 8 to 10 extra wins.
Yep.
That's the lack of support that Wolf has gotten, and to have numbers that good indicates that he has almost single-handedly carried this team to this point, which means he should get a claim. How many other, like, Macklin Celebrini, as great as his year has been, super impressive, hit the ground running in the NHL, big body, didn't wade into it at all. He's been fantastic. But the Sharks are 32nd in the league.
Mm-hmm.
And Lane Hudson, fantastic. The rookie company that he's had, the fact that at this point he is outscoring or on pace with points with Connor Bedard, who's in year two, is bananas. And the Canadians are on the cusp of the playoffs, 4 points back. But that's not a playoff spot.
Well, and it's funny you bring that up, Frank, because last week I did a little bit, not the deepest dive ever, but a deep-ish dive on teams that have been bottom five in goals per game or bottom five in goals for that have also made the playoffs. And like the list of teams that have been bottom five, I think prior, like last year, Washington made the playoffs. I think there were two other teams since 2013-14 that have made the playoffs while also being bottom five. I went back as far as 13-14 because the Kings were that year and won the Stanley Cup. They were 26th overall in a 30-team league. But last place from the, again, you know, it was like a surface scratch of about 10 to 15 years. But the point is that in this modern NHL era, teams that finish 31st, 32nd in goals per game don't make the playoffs, and yet here the Flames are, and they are holding down a playoff spot with less than a quarter of the season to go. I don't know how you can. So, you know, it was my contention where you are that if it were right now, Dustin Wolf, I don't have a vote, but would be number one on my Calder ballot. And you go take a look at, I was over at Evolving Hockey and their wins against replacement and standings points above expected. And only Connor Hellebuck is ahead of Dustin Wolf in those metrics. Like we're talking about a guy.
And what about the comparison to Steve Mason, the last goalie to win the Calder?
Who had, I believe, 10 shutouts that year, if I remember correctly.
10, a league best 10 shutouts. He finished runner up in the Vezina. And part of the reason why he got as much Calder love as he did is because the Blue Jackets had never qualified for the playoffs in franchise history prior to that. But they also finished 21st out of 30 in goals for that year. So there's a lot of parallels. Yep. Another team that had some veteran talent, that had some young guys mixed in, but really there weren't sky-high expectations for. And Steve Mason came in kind of out of the clear blue sky and as a 20-year-old took that team to the playoffs. So I see a lot of similarities in the path. I see a lot of incredible statistics to back it up. I don't know why I continue to see Dustin Wolf ranked third on Calder Trophy ballots, though, anyone doing them publicly.
Yep. Just talking to somebody with the Flames, a couple people with the Flames over the last few days, and the worry of like, oh, is this going to be an Aginla situation again, or are we going to be talking about the Eastern voters not giving him enough love? And so I hope that the conversation really does start to change in that regard when it comes to Dustin Wolf and the Calder Trophy. And you know what? He might get Vezina votes as well, Frank. And you mentioned Steve Mason finishing as runner-up that year. I could see, you know, fourth, fifth place votes for Dustin Wolf or higher when it comes to the Vezina Trophy as well. We're chatting with Frank Saravalli. We don't have a ton of time, so I'll just hit you with a couple others here. On the Canucks, first of all, I guess give us the view from there. They don't trade Brock Besser. Patrick Alvin says, well, we wanted a first-round pick. We didn't get it, so we kept him. I know that that's kind of been controversial, and they still don't have Quinn Hughes or Thatcher Demko. What's just kind of your read on Vancouver, who sits a point back of the Flames for this final playoff spot?
Well, that I don't know if it was necessarily the controversial part that they said we didn't get a first-round pick, so therefore we didn't move him. That's not controversial in and of itself. It was more so, hey, you wouldn't believe the offers that we got for this guy if I told you I'd have to run out of here, which I think in a lot of ways demeaned the player, which for someone that has been as loyal as Brock Besser has been, he wouldn't say bleep if his mouth was full of it. And I think that part is disappointing to know that the contract extension talks didn't go the way that they wanted them to, probably for Besser as well, because he entered the year certainly thinking, man, I really want to extend and be part of the Canucks for the long haul, to then have it go sideways and then essentially the team say publicly, no one really wanted you. That part has rightfully so caused a lot of harm, I'll say, and I'll argue irreparable harm. So players pay attention to that. Agents pay attention to that. It's certainly something that caught a lot of attention, and rightfully so. So it's just another log on the fire for what has been an incredibly dramatic season for the Vancouver Canucks.
I'm just curious, first of all, do you have a read on when we might see Hughes and or Demko back? And just on top of that, your feel on them as they try to overtake Calgary?
Demko, no. Look, with Hughes, they'd love to have him back tomorrow. I mean, that's how much they desperately need him for this playoff chase. The problem is they're also trying to wrestle with a situation that he may not be able to heal from for the remainder of this season. Like, this might be something that they have to manage, and they're trying to figure out the best course. Like, what is the ideal time to give him to try and get him as close to 100% as we can possibly get him, knowing that it's an inexact science, and that also we're trying to balance that with, hey, we want to make the playoffs here. We're this close. Why can't we be that team as the eighth seed that makes a little noise? And that's, they're trying to, and also the long-term health of, hey, we want to make sure that at the same time, this guy's our superstar perennial Norris Trophy candidate who could have been in the Hart Trophy conversation had he played more this season. They want to keep the long view in mind as well.
Yep. Okay. Last one for you. Can you kind of give us a roadmap and maybe unmuddy the waters when it comes to all of what's been surrounding Mikko Rantanen? Obviously, there was the Rod Brind'Amour comments and what he had to say about Rantanen in his very brief time in Carolina. There's the Toronto situation with Mitch Marner and whether or not the Maple Leafs were a serious contender. And now, obviously, he's a member of the Dallas Stars and there for the long haul. But just, can you give us a little bit of a roadmap as to how this Mikko Rantanen thing has meandered to where it is now?
Okay, so I'm going to ask you to be like a little bit more specific, because I could probably do a full half hour without stopping. What specifically would you like to know? Like, what do you think people are most interested in about how this ended up the way that it did?
The two things. How close actually was Toronto to maybe moving Mitch Marner if he hadn't waived? And number two, did Rantanen really go to Carolina having zero intention of signing there right from the get-go? I guess those would be the two. Those are the comments, essentially, that Rod Brind'Amour made.
Yeah, so I'll answer the second one first. And I do believe that that was the case, that when they had a conversation at some point, whether it was on arrival or whether it was slightly before the trade, I think that part remains a little bit hazy or fuzzy. But that Andy Scott, Mikko Rantanen's agent from Octagon Hockey, he was on Sportsnet Radio today saying, look, we were unequivocal with Carolina saying that we wanted to remain in Colorado. And that part I don't think is a surprise to anyone, given that Mikko Rantanen in the end was pretty floored by the trade. Now, when it comes to the Toronto portion of it, I think that part is also pretty cut and dry, that essentially the Leafs were trying to get involved in the Rantanen discussion. And even though they needed a center, they were thinking to themselves, man, this is an incredible game breaker that we could add to our lineup and give us a dimension that we otherwise wouldn't have. Like, which team in the league couldn't use a Mikko Rantanen? They also happen to be on the short list of four teams that Rantanen said he would agree to sign an extension with. It was Toronto, Vegas, Florida, and Dallas. And Toronto was aware of that, but one of the big hurdles was the Carolina Hurricanes were asking for Mitch Marner in return, straight up. Unsigned, pending free agent for unsigned, pending free agent. The problem with that is Rantanen had no trade protection, and Mitch Marner has full no trade protection. And in that case, they asked repeatedly Mitch Marner to either come to a contract extension with them to the point where there has been no negotiation, or in the absence of a contract materializing in Toronto, would you be willing to waive your no trade to go to Carolina? And they got a hard no from that, from the Marner camp. So what they did was they tried to get competitive and say, okay, even with Mitch Marner here, for the short term, the time being, can we offer you futures to get our hands on Mikko Rantanen? Meaning they offered Fraser Minton, who ended up moving to Boston, as well as first-round pick Easton Cowan. So that's two first-round picks plus two additional future first-round picks. So a total of the equivalent of four first-round picks to get their hands on Rantanen. And the thought process was, well, we can re-sign Rantanen, and then that's just our replacement, our insurance piece for Marner, and then he walks in free agency. That didn't end up happening, and I understand it from Carolina's perspective, even though Toronto remained floored in the end. They basically said to, you know, to Dallas, if you're Carolina, they said, we'd prefer the roster player in Logan Stankoven and two first-round picks rather than two prospects. We want someone that we think can help us now, a proven NHL player. So that's the package they ended up selecting. Took too long for Carolina to get the deal done to be able to then take those picks and their cap space and bring in something else that could help them before the deadline expired. But it made for a pretty fascinating 48 hours.
Did it ever.
Well, that was an awesome explanation, Frank. Great stuff as always, pal. We appreciate the time. We'll do it again next Tuesday, but good to catch up with you. Thank you, pal.
Have a good week. See ya.
You as well, man. He's Frank Saravalli. He is our Daily Faceoff NHL insider, and he joins us every week on Flames Talk, brought to you by Self Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave or visit selftrailchrysler.com.
Talking your team right now. Flames Talk is on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
It's a Tuesday edition of the program. My name is Pat Steinberg. We've got Wes Gilbertson with us of Post Media. Hello, Wes.
Hey, buddy.
And now Derek Wills joins us, the voice of the Flames, because it's time for the Tuesday edition of your Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The fastest growing segment of vehicles they sell is electric. Informed buyers are coming to see. Perhaps you should discover why. Minutes from the Calgary Airport. So on Monday's roundtable, we spent it almost entirely. Well, we did spend it entirely talking about Dustin Wolf and his potential candidacy for the Calder Trophy. And so we didn't get to our second topic on Monday. So that's where we'll start on this Tuesday. So, gents, over the last few games, we've seen Connor Zary start games on the fourth line with Kevin Rooney and Ryan Lomberg, and Matt Coronato start games with Jonathan Huberdeau and Nazem Kadri on a line. But as games have gone along, we've seen those guys flip-flop. We've seen some other changes in terms of wingers. But, you know, at times, and probably most frequently, we've seen Zary get pushed up to the Kadri line, and then we've seen Coronato get bumped down to the Rooney line, and kind of a rotation between Zary and Coronato. I'm just curious how we're feeling about that odd thing they're doing with Zary and Coronato right now, because it's something that we haven't seen quite like this before.
Yeah, it is very interesting. I mean, I think it's safe to say that both Matt Coronato and Connor Zary are top nine forwards, but right now they're rotating from first line to fourth line, which is definitely unique, but I think there could be a couple of factors here, guys. The first one for me is I think they like what they see from the middle six right now. So you've got a line with Joel Farabee, Michael Backlund, and Blake Coleman, and there definitely seems to be a fit there for Farabee playing with Backlund and Coleman. And then I've quite liked what Martin Pospisil has brought to a line with Morgan Frost and Yegor Sharangovich. And for me, Sharangovich has been a little bit up and down. Really liked him in Philadelphia, didn't like him in Dallas, and thought he was better when the team returned to Calgary on Saturday night. But there might be something there as well. So I think they're probably hesitating to break up one of those lines to move one of Coronato or Zary back into the top nine on a full-time basis. The other thing for me, fellas, and this might be the bigger of the two things, and I'm just throwing those out there. I don't know if this is actually, you know, part of what Ryan Husk is thinking here, but, you know, Connor Zary missed 15 games with a knee injury. And then on top of that, when he was probably ready to return, you know, right around the time the Flames went on that 2-week break for the Four Nations faceoff, you had a two-week break. So tack 2 weeks onto the 15 games. And that was a long absence for Connor Zeri. And when he came back, he was immediately put in a top nine role. And he didn't look like the same player. He didn't look as explosive. He didn't look as dynamic. So, you know, taking a look at time on ice, they've cut back his time on ice. And ever since they started doing that, he started to look a lot more, to me at least, like the old Zeri. More explosive, more dynamic. So I'm wondering if less is more in this case. Less ice time is more as he continues to ramp up after coming back.
The way I see this one, guys, is, and I agree with Wilsey on the point that Ryan Huska really does like the way that middle six is shaping up right now. Certainly likes what he's getting from Farabee with Coleman and Backlund. You know, likes the click that he's starting to see on that third line. And what I see is a coach who doesn't want to put either of those two guys on the fourth line. Like, I think the balancing act or the flip-flop or the yo-yo or whatever you want to describe as what's happening with Coronado and Zeri is a coach really wanting to make sure that he doesn't send the wrong message to either guy. I think it was a pretty big story, right, when Connor Zeri was going to be on the fourth line, whether that was a big story on the news sites, a big story on social media with the fan base fuming about it the way they were. Like, it was, there was a big focus on the fact that Connor Zeri was going to be skating on the fourth line. And I think Connor Zeri said all the right things about it, although I bet he was a little bit miffed about it happening at the same time. And why not? He's a top nine forward. I think the same would happen with Matt Coronado. Yeah, he'd, you know, say all the right things and do all the right things on the fourth line, but maybe not really understand why he was there. And what I see here is Ryan Huska doing his darndest to make sure he doesn't not lose either guy, but just sort of irk either guy. Like, he's trying to make sure they both know that he doesn't think of them as fourth line forwards. And Wilsey, you were there at the media avail yesterday at the Salonome. I know Pat missed it because he wasn't feeling great, but one of the interesting things that came up was Ryan Huska talking about the challenge of, I guess, keeping all 21 or 22 or 23 guys on a roster feeling valued. And he talked about how there's always guys who think that they should be playing a little more or aren't happy with their role or maybe aren't seeing the specials work they think they deserve or whatever it might be. And he talked about how hard it is to make every single guy feel valued and how that's how you get the best out of them. And that whole answer, and I wish I was smart enough to remember, I would have asked Pat to cue it up so we could listen to it, but that whole answer just had me thinking about Coronado and Zeri and the way he's going back and forth. I think this is a coach just trying to sort of massage both of those egos and make sure those guys don't feel like they're fourth liners.
It's a really interesting one. And just kind of from talking to some different people, listening to Ryan Huska over the last number of days, even when the team was still on the road, talking to some people around the team. The other thing that I think really plays into this and I think can't be overstated when having a conversation like this is how much they really, really like what Pospisil is bringing with Frost. And I think since he's been put on that line, this is the best Pospisil that we've seen all season. He's playing a little bit more than he was when he was on the fourth line, but still playing the same way, still being effective. Feels like he's drawing a penalty or two every single night right now. He's getting under the skin of the opposition. He's getting opportunities. He's been around the net. And guys, we talk a lot about, you know, could they get Sharangovich going or could they get Farabee going? And he scored a couple games in a row now, or other players that maybe haven't been as, could they get Connor Zeri going again after the break? Like, we talk about how if player X and player Y get going, that could give a little bit of a boost to the offense or a little bit of a boost to the team. Well, if they can get Martin Pospisil going in the top nine to the same extent he was going with them last year, that gives them an element that they haven't really had all season. And I think right now, because Pospisil has been a really nice fit with Frost on that line, I think that's another reason why we haven't seen a switch and why Zeri and or Coronado are having to play at times on line number four. And so I think the rest of it is fascinating how you message it to those guys. And I'm curious to see how long this lasts. But I think there's a real realization, and my kind of read is on top of all of what you guys have said, that the more effective Pospisil you can get, the better in terms of how he can help this team in their final 19 games down the stretch and maybe into the playoffs as well.
Yeah, and the other thing to keep in mind is that both guys are getting power play time. So, you know, that will help them feel better about themselves, and right now it's working. Now, with that said, do I think that having either Matt Coronado or Connor Zeri on the fourth line long-term is the way to go for the Flames? Absolutely not. So sooner or later, they're going to have to find a spot for both of those guys in the top nine. But you know, right now, it's all about winning hockey games. And I do think that with Zeri missing as much time as he did and not looking like himself when he came back, and then them cutting back his ice time and him starting to look more like the guy that he did pre-injury than post-injury, it's working right now. So I think that's probably the best game plan short-term. Long-term, not so much. So we'll see where this goes. But, you know, Connor Zeri, I think, has really started to find his game again. And, you know, Matt Coronado, I'd like to see a little bit more production from him. We'll see if he's able to provide that for the team as they head down the stretch here. And, you know, Martin Pospisil, to your point, Pat, is starting to look a lot more like the guy who he did for most of his rookie season. A guy who's hard to play against, a guy who plays in straight lines, north, south, gets in there with his speed and his size on the forecheck and, excuse my French, but pisses people off on the other team and has been drawing penalties as a result. So again, long-term, this is probably not going to work for the Flames, but short-term, it has been. They played a couple of really good games in a row despite losing one of them. So, hey, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, at least not right now.
You know, guys, when this gets interesting for me is going to be when one of those two really, really stakes a claim to that spot. And maybe that is part of the rotation, too, is Ryan Husk is waiting for one of those guys to say, hey, you got to keep playing me with Kadri and Huberdeau. Forget this rotation. I'm the guy who should be in that spot. Yeah. Because I don't think we've seen that, right? Connor Zeri scored two goals in Philadelphia. Yeah, great. One of them was with those top line guys. One of them was with Lomberg and Rooney. Matt Coronado's last goal was in Philadelphia as well, but that was an empty netter. Like, we're not seeing a ton of 5-on-5 scoring from either of those two right now, and especially with Huberdeau and Kadri. And so I think that's probably the next part of it is somebody grab that. Like, we hear Ryan Husk all the time say, somebody grab that role and tell me I can't take it away from you. And that's probably the interesting part is, you know, pick a name out of a hat, whatever. Let's say Matt Coronado has a terrific game against the Vancouver Canucks and scores a couple. What do you do with Connor Zeri in the next game? Is he just a fourth liner? Are you trying to figure out, okay, well, maybe we rotate him with Yegor Sharangovich so we can get him some more time on that line? I don't know what that next move is, but that's when I'm going to be really sort of curious to see how Ryan Huska arranges his chess pieces is when somebody says, no, this is my spot. Forget Coronado or forget Zeri, whichever one it is. Just keep me with these two.
Yeah.
And Pat, just to pick up on something you said earlier.
Yeah.
So I did a hot stove for ATB Financial last night. And one of the guys I was chatting with was Rasmus Anderson, who, of course, has a long history with Ryan Huska, the only head coach he's had at the professional level in North America, or not the only head coach, but a coach who he's had from start to finish as a pro in North America is Ryan Huska, whether it be in the AHL as a head coach or in the NHL as an assistant coach and now a head coach. And, you know, Rasmus had so many positive things to say about Ryan last night. And one of the things he talked about was how strong a communicator he is. So if a coach sticks a top-line guy on the fourth line and doesn't communicate with him and tell him, here's why we're doing this, and here's the plan moving forward, then I think it's way harder to swallow that for the player. But Huska is such a strong communicator. I'm sure he's had conversations with both Matt Coronado and Connor Zeri and said, okay, here's what we're doing. Here's why we're doing this. And, here's what we'd like to get to moving forward. And because of that, I think that that just puts the player's mind at ease. He's not sitting there wondering, well, you know, what did I do? Why am I on the fourth line? Why am I not in the top nine? Why am I not getting power play time? So I think that Ryan Huska being such a strong communicator puts him in a position to use Connor Zeri and Matt Coronato in these very unique roles that they've been in for the last handful of games.
Daily Flames Roundtable. It is Derek, Wes, and Pat on this Tuesday. And we'll get more into the matchup of Calgary-Vancouver on Wednesday because it's a big showdown. But each team has 19 games remaining as we're talking right now. The Canucks will have 18 games remaining because they play Tuesday night against Montreal before they play the Flames Wednesday at the Scotiabank Saddledome. At most, there will be 1 point separating the teams one way or the other going into Wednesday's game with that final playoff spot very much in the crosshairs. But, you know, less about the game on Wednesday night and more about the long run, because the game on Wednesday night isn't going to decide who makes the playoffs. It will have an impact, but isn't going to be the main deciding factor. Where's an area that you see the Flames in the stretch drive having an edge on the Canucks as we move into this very crucial sprint to the finish?
Well, I've got a long list, but I know we're short for time, so I'll be as quick as I can. At the start of the season, I thought the Canucks roster on paper was definitely better than the Flames. But if you compare them side by side now, I'm not convinced of that. You subtract JT Miller, who outside of Quinn Hughes, I think was their best player. You subtract Quinn Hughes, who won the Norris Trophy last season, but can't stay healthy. Will he play again this season? How much will he play this season? How close to 100% will he be if he plays again? There are a lot of questions surrounding Quinn Hughes, who's obviously one of the best blue liners in the league. And then there's the goaltending. Thatcher Demko just can't seem to stay healthy. You know, Kevin Lankinen's done a pretty good job, but when I look at his last six starts since the Four Nations break, he's had three really good starts and three pretty bad starts. So are the Canucks going to get consistent enough goaltending? And I think even if they get decent goaltending, I'd still give the Flames tandem of Dustin Wolf and Dan Vladar the edge. So as far as roster construction, I actually like the Flames better than the Canucks at this stage of the game, because of the loss of Miller and because of the injuries. And then there's the obvious. I mean, the Flames are 1 point ahead of the Canucks, same number of games played. They have the tiebreaker and they've got one head-to-head left, and it's going to be played in Calgary and not in Vancouver. So, you know, for me, the Flames are in the driver's seat. They control their own destiny when it comes to the second wild card spot in the Western Conference. And guys, I feel better about their chances to get in now than I have at any point in time this season.
If you go through the tail of the tape, guys, the biggest sort of advantage I see for the Flames, and this is something that Wilsey touched on as well, I just wrote down one word, and that's stability. They don't have the soap opera, drama, all the other stuff that seems to be surrounding the Canucks right now. And I do think if you get Quinn Hughes back in your lineup in Vancouver, if you get Thatcher Demko back in your lineup, I do think the Canucks become the stronger team on paper. And that's only on paper, but I do believe there'd be more talent on that roster. But what I see in Calgary is they've just been able to sort of the complete opposite of last year, just clip along. Like, there haven't been a lot of
consistent
distractions. Yeah, there hasn't been a lot of BS. There haven't been rumors of infighting. You know, there haven't been, oh my God, did you see what the coach or the GM said? There's just been a lot of stability. And I think as you get toward the end of an 82-game season, that's instability in Vancouver could have really taken a toll, and that might start to show. And I think the Flames, that's their biggest edge for me. I could go through by position and go one way or the other, but that's the biggest edge they have in my books.
Well, and I mean, yeah, the silliness that continues to plague that market or plague that team, I don't think has helped them in any way, shape, or form this year. And I do think, on top of all that, there's more pressure in Vancouver. The Canucks were supposed to be a team that took a step from being in Game 7 in Round 2 last year. Like, the Canucks. It's not all that different to what we saw in 22-23 for the Flames when, you know, the pressure was immense on that team. Yes, they had lost Johnny, and yes, they had lost Tkachuk, but remember the summer of 2022, the summer of Brad, and people were talking about, myself included, I'm not throwing anybody else under the bus, I was talking about, among many, how maybe the Flames are in a better spot to have playoff success than they were before, and maybe this is a team that can truly take a step towards contending for a cup. And obviously it's been an unmitigated disaster in a lot of ways since then, especially that one season. And it feels very similar in Vancouver. They don't have the same type of offseason overhaul, but they did trade a massive piece of their roster before the deadline in JT Miller. And there's a lot. Remember that year there was all the Daryl Sutter, Nazem Kadri, Jonathan Huberdeau innuendo. Well, there's all that drama happening right now in Vancouver, and they were expected to be a team that took that next step and maybe could get to a Western Conference final with the same roster, and here they are, not even in a playoff spot as we're talking right now. So I would absolutely echo the just instability, intangible type stuff that I think Calgary has the huge advantage on, Wilsey. And, you know, I will say the on-ice area that I just feel more comfortable about. I don't think there's Vancouver's got the potential to score more. Calgary's 32nd in the NHL, so you're probably going to take every offense in the league head-to-head against the Flames right now. Defensively, I think you could lean one way or the other, especially if Hughes is healthy. But I trust Calgary's goaltending more than Vancouver's right now. And that one's not close, because even if when Demko returns, for how long is he going to return for? 4 games? 6 games? Yeah. 2 periods? Like, we don't know. So I just feel so much more confident with Dustin Wolf as the guy that is going to get the lion's share of the starts. And I feel a whole lot more confident in Dan Vladar in the understudy role when he gets called upon than I do right now of Lankinen and whoever. What are they? They've got they've got Shelovs and whatever. What's his name? The other guy's name. And Demko on the shelf. So I would feel a whole lot more comfortable as a fan with Calgary's goaltending than if I were a Canucks fan and their goaltending. And we all know how important goaltending is down the stretch.
Here's the other big thing for me, guys. Buy-in.